Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
I'm Tyler Adams, and you are listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis on ESPN 97.5.
Always nice to get a shout-out from a rising young U.S. national team talent, Tyler Adams. Gotta love it. Chicken Shack is the name of this band going down. Coming back, Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. Couple of things today. Manchester United, 3-0 winners over Brighton, pushing for a Champions League place. That has to be the priority for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer over FA Cup and anything else they're involved in. Get in and get that Champions League money. Also, Barcelona today, 2-2 draw with Atletico Madrid. Some real struggles for Barcelona right now, both on and off the field. All right, 2 weeks ago, El Bete TV and Radio's Edafe Mathieu, who I have come to know now, really nice guy, talented journalist in Lagos, Nigeria. We did part one of talking Nigerian football. Here's part two.
Edafe Mathieu joining us, El Bete TV and radio, also the host of Chit Chat in Lagos, Nigeria. It's amazing that, you know, you just made me remind myself that I'm talking to you in Lagos, Nigeria. So let me go back to the NPFL. And you say they can't even utilize the tools of technology to promote their teams. What type of attendances are at these games? What is the quality of play like? Take us a little bit deeper into that. And do these teams have followings in the National Professional Football League in Nigeria?
Okay, so I'm going to take you on a sequence of on this journey, because it's not like in Europe where every other week you have 1,000 at the Emirates Stadium and 78,000 or 90,000 at the Nou Camp and Benabu and the rest. So this is what's going to happen. Nigeria is a country of 180 million going on 200 million people. We don't have a proper census, but that's the number that they bandy around. And then statistically, we have 40 million addicted sports lovers. And when I say sports, that includes tennis, wrestling, and the rest of them. But of that 40 million, we have between 23 to 25 million addicted football lovers. All they need is get the football right, wrap it in a good gift wrapper, and put it on the table like a Thanksgiving turkey, and we will feast on it. It doesn't matter who is playing. So in 2016, for instance, Rangers won the league, my memory serves me right now, and a certain Imam Amapakabo, who was also a goalkeeper for the Nigerian national team in 1985 when we won the first on the 17 World Cup, Kodak on the 17 World Cup in, is it Japan? Yes, no, it's China. The average attendance at the Enugu Stadium, which is the Nnamdi Azikiwe Stadium in Enugu, was full house. Full house was, the stadium was full to capacity, and you still have a lot of people like you have outside the stadium, like you have when the Super Bowl is going on. So, and then the same thing for Lagos, the same thing for, I've been to Kano a couple of times, the same thing for Kano when Kano players are playing. Enyimba also have a full house and a few other stadiums like that. Now, having said that, it's not everybody. Friendship is something you cultivate, especially in a time like this where there is the second screen. The second screen is what we call the mobile phone. The second screen, growing up, for instance, we go to football field and we focus on the game. Today, there is a second screen. You're watching 2 minutes. You're putting your face on the screen. You're trying to send something on Instagram. You're trying to send something on Twitter. You're trying to check live score. So if this game is not consistent, take, for instance, you don't know when this season will start and end. You don't know when the next season is going to start and end. Those little things brings inconsistencies to the mind of the fans. So they go back again and focus on the European games that you know that starts in August and ends in May.
So the organization is not good. The organization
The organization is terrible. But when we come down to the quality of players, I've played football, I've coached it, I've managed the football club. So I'm going to tell you this. A player can only, like they say, you can only attack what is in front of you. A player is as good as the equipment that is available to him. What is the quality of boots he's wearing in 2020? What is the quality of the pitch he's playing on? How filled is his stomach before going on the field? Is it dealing with a lot of psychological issues? I'm watching Amazon Prime and I'm seeing All or Nothing Man City, All or Nothing Borussia Dortmund, All or Nothing the Brazilian national team. And I'm seeing how players are treated like they are demigods. You know, injuries are treated properly. But then here you have people who don't even have to deal with that. We had a player who fell down on the field and died because an ambulance didn't start. You understand? This is just last season. It's not like it's 10 years ago. In 2020, 2019, 2020, we still have a player slumping. Just 2 days ago, a Nigerian player of mine, is it 2 days ago? It was yesterday. Taiwo Awoniyi slumped on the field. He was resuscitated, taken to the hospital. By the time I was recording my show that evening, yesterday evening, I put a call through to him and he said he's fine, that he's in the hospital, but he just can't talk right now because he's surrounded by doctors and all that. God forbid that happened in Nigeria, he just would have died. He just would have died. So those are the little things that you put on this balance. The other one is a problem. Nigeria has never had issues with the talent of the players. We also do not have the best coaches right now. We don't have the best coaches right now. There was once upon a time where we had great coaches in Nigeria. Okay, coaches like
right there. You don't have the best coaches because I'm listening to what you say is a league that's not well organized. It's not professional enough. There's talent there. The coaches aren't good enough. So with all these tremendous players in the history of Nigeria, the J.J. Okocha, the names go on and on, Olise, Emenalo, Finidi George, I wrote them all down, Okechukwu, all these guys, Yakini, Amokachi. I mean, these are legendary names. I've called some of Nigeria's games in the World Cup. Do they come back outside of just the national team coaching position? Are they coming back to provide the leadership as guys that have gone to Europe, as guys that have gotten amazing opportunities, have achieved amazing things? Are a lot of them coming back to Nigeria and giving back to the game and trying to grow the game with their ideas as well?
And the saddest part to answer this question, I wish I could deflect it, but then I don't want to deflect this one because this is the bone of the matter. You would have thought that with exposure, with the kind of exposure that Nigerian players have had from the late 80s into the early 90s and up until this time, they would have done what we call positional turnaround Nigerian football, whereby they systematically engaged in the system and take over the running of the sport and then show us how it is done from how they have seen it overseas. But you see, the easiest way to divide a people is to make sure they are never united. And one of the greatest ways to make people disunited is to put money and women in their midst. I don't know how that happened, but it has been like that from the medieval days to the Roman Empire days to the Greek Empire days. Forever, it has always been like that. The two things that divide nations, okay, now you can add land to it and technology to it, but the two things that divide people most is women and money. And so Nigeria have had the highest collection of disunited ex-national. So the class four were some of the best players that we've had in our football history. But they are also the greediest bunch of human beings you would ever meet on the planet. And they are also the most disunited group of people. Now, this is a simple route to taking over administration of Nigerian football. You finish playing football, like you've seen of Reina, the guys in the US, and all of these guys coming into the system. You go through, you first of all have to read the books. What does the law say is the process? Now, the greatest power for leadership is influence. Anybody that has influence can lead anybody. That's how Donald Trump got into power in the first place. He had media influence. So whatever was done, whether I was a political novice, that's nobody's business. But leadership is influence, simple, pure and simple. Anybody that have influence will lead anybody. So these guys retire. They're very popular. They are known by everybody, the government, the states, at state level, at presidential level, they would refuse. They find themselves too big to go to the lower level to get in entrance into running state efforts And then from state FA, they now get legislation into contesting for the presidency of the federation, the football federation. They don't do that. So what they do is, whatever is left of them after retiring, they gallivant. They play a few charity games here, get a few money here. And then you know how it is. You're spending more than you're earning. Very soon they are broke. But these guys who we claim to be novice, who don't know football, spend all their money into administrative position. I jack whatever money that is coming from sponsorship, from FIFA, from CAF, and then they do with it what they like and abandon the game, kill the game. These ex-players are now broke. The only position they can jostle for is coaching position at the national team level. As we speak, a few hours ago, it was announced that we need a judge. The guy that I respect the most is the person in line to be the coach of the under-17 national team. Now, we've had Onuka Agbade as coach. We've had assistant coach, sorry. We've had Emmanuel Amunike go to Chile and win the under-17 World Cup. Now, we've also had Iguaivon in 2001, where we were eliminated in group stage with the toss of coin, that team that had Mikel and the rest of them. We're going to have Finidi George. It starts a virtuous circle of when you're broke, you're not coming to go cap in hand begging, just give me a coaching job. Knowing fully well that this coaching job will not come with all the support that you need, all the infrastructure that you need. There is no proper hotel for this team. There is no proper kit for these players. There is no proper feeding system. There's no nutritional science for these players. But because they are broke, they are not taking the job because they want to contribute. No, they're taking this job because of the dollar allowance that comes in. They're taking this job because of the power to go to the tournament and be seen among the big boys. And just that, and then when they bring in this player in as well, if you're able to win the under 17 World Cup with those teams, you obviously know that if you sign a club in Europe and you keep calling them on the phone to ask them to send you a few dollars here and there, that's practically the reason why they come to coach. But then that is the biggest problem, because if they are a united force, they would unseat whatever political group of people that are running our football right now, and then they'll bring to bear that knowledge. But then it goes to the fore again that though they went to play football in Europe, they haven't learned anything. They haven't learned anything. Now, you know that thing they say about African footballers? African footballers, some of them are the biggest illiterates that you would have. So I think that the fact that they didn't learn anything, David Beckham played the same football that our players play, but look at David Beckham now with Inter Miami in Europe. But none of you've never heard that the Nigerian player retired from football and decided to set up a football club and develop the team and grow the team and use this international influence to bring in sponsorship and merchandise, the things that are lacking, and good media and all that, so that even if it is just his club that can set example for the rest, we've not seen that because the players are as terrible as even the guys that were criticizing. So we're left with the worst of two evils, or always the best of two evils.
It's a lot of work to organize, but you make a tremendous point. And we're talking to Adafi Mathew, Elebete TV and Radio, also the host of the Chit Chat Show in Lagos, Nigeria. When you said that if all those ex-players got unified, boy, a bell went off in my head, because we always say over here, Nigeria is so talented, creative, unpredictable, so much fun to watch. There's such a joy in their game. Dangerous team in World Cups. You know, you name it. But then we are always like, well, how are they coming into a World Cup? Is their federation in turmoil? Is their coach in turmoil with the players? Yeah, so it's always very unpredictable, I think, for those on the outside. That point you make about ex-players getting together and how powerful they could be, I agree with that. But that takes a lot of work. A lot of ex-players that have been at the top, the pinnacle, don't want to do that. To your point, Landon Donovan, Tim Howard have all gotten involved with USL teams at the tier below Major League Soccer. And this is healthy to me, because these are guys that are intelligent, they're smart about the game, they've had experiences. This is another way for them to contribute to the game in the U.S. and provide opportunity for others.
Now, Glenn, that thing you just said is what is lacking here. You just mentioned that a player as big as Landon Donovan and Tim Howard, who was a Manchester United goalkeeper, you know, the Premier League winner, also was at Everton and the rest of them, had gone to a lower tier in in the U.S. It because it doesn't feel like he's entitled. There's no sense of entitlement. What we have here, not that I'm saying it, but it's the truth. What we have here is a group of people who finish their time, run of their term as football players, and still feel like it is an entitlement. They should just be given a free ride, a free pass to become managers at the top. And the only place they want to manage is the Super Eagles. They don't want to get their hand dirty. They don't want to put in the brick and the mason and put on that work that produces results. Even the great captain of Barcelona, Pep Guardiola, went to coach the junior side. He had to spend one season coaching a dead team, a dead Barcelona junior team, before he was given that chance by Laporte to Barcelona team when Rijkaard was fired. Sometimes you have to, you know, play the catapult. You have to pull back to go forward. You have to. Nobody plants a seed by putting it up in the air. You have to dig deep in the ground, put it under dirt, and, you know, give it time, and then it grows and produces fruit. The Nigerian football players don't think that way. We only have the Super Eagles, the under-23, which is the Olympic team, the under-20s, and then the under-17. And then, God help us, the under-15 that is inconsistent. That's five teams. And then on the female side, we have the Falcons, the Falconets, the Flamingos. Three. So that's eight teams. And then every generation of players, you have between 20 to 20. How are these people going to jostle for eight positions? I mean, amongst the women and the men. That doesn't make sense. It doesn't take rocket science to understand that if you want to fix this problem, you have to go to the bottom of the pyramid, because at the bottom, the base, there is a lot of opportunities. At the top, the seat is very narrow. So it's common sense, but then common sense is actually not common.
That was Adafe Mathieu, and man, I'll tell you, he is passionate. Fix the problem at the bottom of the pyramid. Think about that. Fix the problem at the bottom of the pyramid. Works in a lot of situations. Nigerian football has so much promise, has produced some stunning results on the world stage. And it's great to get the knowledge from Adafe Mathieu. That was part two in a series of three. All right, Soccer Matters, ESPN, 97.5. Manchester United, 3-0 winners today over Brighton. Big win for them. Barcelona, a real struggle on a day where there were very important matches. Still to come on the show, we got Dr. George Chiampas coming up next from U.S. Soccer. We're going to talk about the initiative play on, and we're going to talk with him about phases, hygiene, all different things going on with U.S. Soccer. We'll get it from an expert. So if you're somebody who has a player in youth soccer, your coaching, your staff, parent, whatever, next segment's going to be a good one. Dr. George Chiappas of U.S. Soccer is up next. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, brought to you by John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, and our great friends out on I-10, Hugh O'Connor's, right now not in operation, but we're hoping they'll get up in operation like many things soon.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
So I just jumped onto Twitter to remind people that Joel Campbell just signed again with Leon. So I don't know where all this regurgitation or not regurgitation, but the whole rumor mill started on Joel Campbell today. But again, doesn't mean there might not have been something there. And I can confirm that I did talk to the Dynamo and that they have been tracking him for a number of years. So. There you go. We're going to move things on here now. As we all know, protocol is important at the professional level. It's important in all of our lives right now. Now, to relate this directly to the youth soccer community is from U.S. Soccer, Dr. George Chiampas. He joins us now. Dr. Chiampas, thank you very much for coming on the show. Yeah, thank you for coming on.
Good to be with you.
Yeah, first thing I'd ask you, how are you and your family doing?
We're doing well. We're doing well. It's been, obviously, for everyone, a challenging 4 months, some ups and downs, but overall, we're hanging in there just like everyone else.
So just to lighten it up a little bit, I'm sure when you tell somebody to wash your hands in your house, it gets done, right?
Yeah, I think my kids are kind of getting sick and tired of the same thing. But I kind of give a little bit of perspective every time I come home from one of my ER shifts.
All right, so let's get into, obviously we're in a big youth soccer community here all over the country. Athletes coming back, going to the fields based on local phases. Talk about the phases now that you really want to get into tonight when it comes to the return of youth soccer players.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, Glenn, I think it's really important that, everyone understands across the country that different areas are going to be in different phases. And be comfortable with that, understanding that, the virus is going to have its ups and downs, and obviously we're seeing that. But the phases are built with that in mind. And the phases have a purpose not only for COVID and creating environments that if someone were to get infected or exposed, that you can really isolate and track. And so it doesn't, shut down a whole club or an organization, but also builds in injury prevention, loads and endurance so that kids can develop with the appropriate amount of time, acclimate with the heat and humidity of the summer, and be able to progress through these phases. And if your environment is controlling COVID, then the hope is that we can get to phase three, which is, competition, so that our kids can develop and continue to have fun in the game of soccer.
Dr. George Chiampas, U.S. Soccer, joining us here tonight. Look, what you've seen with professional protocol with the professional teams, Premier League, La Liga, obviously the Bundesliga coming back first. What are your thoughts on it overall?
I think it's been probably better than I think all of us in the soccer and sports world have expected. And on the medical side, we're going to learn a lot, and we're going to learn where things, kind of fall apart and where we're exposed. And I think thus far in the, with Bundesliga, Premier League and other leagues, and then even here with NWSL, what we're going to learn is, in just playing the game, and if everyone is really being strict and compliant on all the mitigation strategies that you can with COVID, we can really, decrease the risk substantially. And then those that don't, follow the mitigation strategies, are not compliant, go out in public when they shouldn't. That's where we're seeing some of the issues in regards to COVID and being able to get back to sport.
So at the end of the day, this comes down to human behavior also. I mean, you can have the best protocol in line set up just like the Bundesliga, but if players and staff don't follow it, it can all go south.
Without question. And that's in sports, that's in life. The fundamentals, what's interesting is what we're seeing in the professional game and our expectations in the youth game and college and high school is really no different. I'm working on the professional side. I'm working with FIFA. And really our guidelines on the youth side, other than the amount of testing that's taking place, is really no different. And that's something that's important for our kids to understand so that when they're watching their heroes in soccer, whether it be in Europe, whether it be here in the United States, on the men's or the women's side, that they're able to see that they're following the same guidelines that we're expecting of them to be able to get back to playing.
All right, take me into training and take me a little bit more into equipment and then some of your nutritional tips as well, and I'll just give you an open platform here.
Sounds good. So phase zero is, no training, stay in shelter. Phase one is expected to be about a 4 to 6 week duration amount of time. Phase one is small team training. It's max 9 players, 1 coach. You can use half a field, so you can have essentially one team, but being on a single large soccer field. In those 4 to 6 weeks in phase one, which is the small group trainings, we're trying to maintain social distancing. The goal of that is to really build good habits around hygiene. So if you can imagine, what we want are our youth players from home working with their parents to go through a screening, making sure that, you know, no one is sick, they're asymptomatic, and then they can go ahead and proceed to go to training. Carpools, we've given guidance on carpools and even gone into that depth. But they should arrive to training with their soccer cleats and their boots on, really kind of minimizing any standing around, and then getting into a 60-minute session in phase one. Phase two, which we've just released, is a 3 to 5 week period of time. The goal of phase two is really to start preparing us for competition. So we're going to see increased amount of loads. We're going to allow 5v5, 6v6 to really kind of replicate the intensity of match play. That's going to be full team training. So now we've taken the two small groups and brought them together. And again, the duration of time is allowing for acclimatization for heat and hydration, building loads appropriately, and injury prevention strategies, so that when we get into, you know, full competition, which is phase three, we've really had now at minimum a 7-week progression for our kids to build good habits in hygiene and COVID, to build the endurance and strength that is needed in injury prevention, as well as acclimate to the heat and humidity so that we can get back to play as safe as possible.
Dr. Chiampas, I think the other thing I'd like to say is just, we have so much admiration for people like yourself who are going into situations and obviously at risk, nurses, doctors, amongst many, many others. So I think one thing we want to say is thank you very much for that as well.
I appreciate it, Glenn. I really do. And I think, all the healthcare workers across the country, I think that's, They're very selfless individuals, frontline workers. But, as everything is going on in this country, we really, do service the public. And I think that, even in the game of soccer, and what we try to do is really create a platform that resonates not only for our players, but our coaches, our parents, our referees. U.S. Soccer has a platform called Recognize to Recover, which really is a great resource for all of our stakeholders. And it has heat guidelines, especially for you folks down in Houston, a CPR video that is specific to the game of soccer, concussion videos, and nutrition and hydration guides. The purpose of that is, as a national governing body, we want to be a single great resource for our game across the United States. But I appreciate that comment, and we'll continue to work hard, and hopefully we can see the light at the end of this COVID tunnel.
Dr. Chiampas, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and continued success with the U.S. Soccer Play On initiative. We thank you so much for coming on the program tonight and bringing some good wisdom around COVID-19 and youth soccer.
Thanks, Glenn, a lot. And to the listeners, be safe.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Chiampas. So great stuff from him there. And nothing like getting it from experts. Good stuff there. All right. So just back to this whole Joel Campbell thing, a 3-year deal with Leon. This was a big saga kind of going on. There was up and down about contract negotiations and things. So he's going to stay at Leon. I think the one thing you can take out of the Tab Ramos interview, and I've had some conversations with Matt Jordan as well, is that there is a definite real push now for the Houston Dynamo to start reaping the long overdue benefits of the youth soccer community in this town. For many years, we've shaken our head as to why it has not been addressed with so much talent here available. So with Nico Lemoine, Juan Castilla, and Marcelo Palomino, another key piece to this whole puzzle is consummated, because now you have a head coach in Tab Ramos with an extensive youth background. He's done all the work, and one who is willing to give opportunity to young players. And you heard it in the way he was talking about Lemoine, Castilla, and Palomino. So this is good for the future. A lot of work is being done. But if you're not tapping into the Houston youth soccer community, which I don't know if we were over all the years, the way we should have been, it's great to see this really moving into a very, very positive direction. So, and when you got a 15-year-old who's being talked about like that by one, Tab Ramos, pretty impressive. Big thanks there to U.S. Soccer and Dr. George Chiampas. We are going to take a break here. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. We're coming back to talk about today's matchup between the Houston Dash and Utah Royals FC. Ends in a 3-3 draw. Set pieces at the end of the day with a 3-1 lead. Really killing the Dash in this one. Coming up next, Rachel Daly. She had a pair in that game.
ESPN 97.5.
I'm Greg Berhalter. You're listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn David on ESPN 97.5.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. The great work behind the glass back in studio being done by Aaron Raybould tonight. And as we know, today the Houston Dash got underway in the NWSL Challenge Cup, started their tournament. They're going to play their first four games, and it's all eight teams will get into the quarterfinals. 3-1 lead, ended up a 3-3 draw with Utah. And the two-goal scorer in that game, Rachel Daly, as many of us know, big piece of this Houston Dash team, joins us now from Utah. Rachel, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm glad to have you on the program tonight, especially on a day where we can talk about today's game. First thing I want to say is I saw you limp off or kind of look like you might have had a little tinge there. Are you okay, and where's your sort of fitness at?
I've been nursing a little groin injury for the whole of preseason, to be honest. So I think it was just a little tweak I felt, and I thought 3-1, comfortable. Maybe it was a good time to come off, but didn't go to plan.
All right. Tell the Dash fans, before we get into the game, and this is so great to have you on because I always enjoy our interviews together, just talk about why and how this team's going to be better this year.
I think there was glimpses today in the way we played. I think there was moments of brilliance, individual brilliance, and as a team, as a collective, offensively and defensively. I think I was saying tonight it's the first time we scored 3 goals in one game in a very long time. But also conceded 3 was obviously really disappointing. But I think there were some great moments tonight and, sorry, today. Wow, that was this morning. Great moments of play, and I think that's exciting that, you know, we were able to score 3 really good goals, and I think that's positive that we have to take away from that game.
All right, so the first goal, great long ball from Katie Naughton, catches a defender a bit high, and then after the delivery, you get in and you get the game's first goal. Look, James Clarkson has talked about this team being a counter-attacking team, but being a better counter-attacking team.
Yeah, I think we forced a few long balls early on in the game, and it was not very effective. We didn't really disrupt them at all, and we didn't pull their back line apart at all. So I think, you know, I think we came close to sort of getting the counter going, and then obviously that ball from Katie Naughton was brilliant, and, you know, I think Veronica's run was just perfectly timed, and we caught them high when, you know, we saw them cheating a little bit, and it was a smart ball, and obviously a great assist from Veronica too.
Yeah, I want to be careful here because it's the first live competition against a different team. So I think we have to understand as footballers that there are going to be mistakes made today. There's a wall that wasn't set up properly. Things are going to happen. But to that counterattacking aspect that you just brought up, Rachel, is it going to be important for you guys this year, you ladies this year, to have times in games where you can hold the ball a little bit in order to tease teams out so that your counter can be more effective?
Yeah, I think we've got the players to do that now. I think, you know, when people think of Houston, they always think of a counter-attacking team. We always think of playing in behind. We've got the pace up front. And I think we just need to add that, you know, to our locker and be able to use a hold-up play. I think it's good bringing the likes of Katie Stengel, who can hold up the ball really well. And obviously just playing to different strengths. I think it's good to have counter-attack and, you know, be a counter-attacking team, but I think we've got to have it in our locker to do other things too. And there was moments today where we did that. I think that's really important moving forward.
It was refreshing to see Katie Stengel, Shay Groom, Megan Oyster, Katie Naughton. These are tremendous additions.
Yeah, great additions. I think they all played really well today and played a big part in all the goals, to be honest. I think Katie assisted Shay. Shay scored. You know, Katie Naughton was a part of my goal. I think it was a great, they've been great additions and on and off the field. And I think that's something that James really wanted to work on in the off-season. You know, get, not that we didn't have that, but get great people and great players. And I think, you know, we showed today that, you know, they fit into the Dashers system and on and off the field.
Dash NWSL, this is the Challenge Cup. It's the first league back. They grabbed some eyeballs on Saturday. There was 500,000 viewers for the opening game between the North Carolina Courage and Portland Thorns. I mean, this has to be pretty exciting for everybody to get back and just finally be playing competition that doesn't look, you know, like a teammate.
You cut out a little bit at the end there. What did you say?
Yeah, I just said it must be just like the build-up, the protocol, all the things you had to go through to get to this point, to finally get some live competition. It just must have been a really freeing moment here today to just fade into your game, think about who you were playing in a different team, and just try to go out there and beat them.
Yeah, obviously, I think it's been difficult. We've had obviously a shorter preseason, and, you know, it's the first time I'm meeting some of the girls on the team, and now we've been stuck in, you know, it's athlete village, whatever we have here, the NWSL village. And, you know, I think that's really important that we've come together as a team. And it's the first time we've actually played together against another team today. So I think that was obviously a big deal for us. And it was nice to have all these girls on my team rather than against me in preseason. And, it was just nice to get underway and have somewhat of a normality, I guess, because obviously nothing about this season has been normal, but just be able to get the games in. And it's good to see everyone and watch the games played live as well tonight and tomorrow and whatever, all the other games.
Houston Dash striker Rachel Daly joining us today. Had two goals today, constant danger. Really was a trigger point up front for the Houston Dash. Tell me about the Athletes Village so that my listeners have a sense of kind of what you guys are going through there, because this is very far from normal.
Yeah, we're currently in a hotel with Sky Blue, so we all have our own floor, and we're on one floor, Sky Blue on another. We've all got our own rooms. You know, obviously there's still, we have to wear our masks everywhere and obviously following every safety precaution possible. I think the other teams, I don't know, I think there's another hotel with four of the other teams in there. So yeah, it's nice. I think it's really nice that we've only got one other team in our hotel, and, you know, we don't have to bump into a lot of other teams all the time, and it's just our own sort of space. And it's great for the girls. I think it's great for us to have, you know, we had a massive ping pong tournament the other night, which was so much fun to get everyone involved and, you know, just to see everyone's personalities and how we can grow as a team on and off the field.
Yeah, we've heard a lot about the camaraderie. It seems very, very good under James Clarkson here in year number two. I want to take it to your second goal, which was off a corner from Christy Mewis. You seem to get a real good run at this.
Yeah, we've worked a lot on set pieces, which again is why it's so disappointing that we've conceded two set pieces late. But, you know, it was one that we'd planned, it was one that we'd practiced. And, yeah, I think I just managed to lose my mark, and Christy's ball was really good ball in, and I just managed to get on the end of it and, lose my mark and just wanted to hit on frame. And yeah, it was good for us to get a goal on the set piece, because I don't think all last season we did.
Yeah, that's true. Good point there. And you did it against the sort of zonal marking inside the six-yard box, and I saw you get a couple of yards run at that. Nobody was going to get up there to beat you to that ball. So fantastic goal. You scored one in stoppage time in the first half. You scored one, I think, the first minute of the second half. So those were timely goals. What else do you take away from today's game?
It's great to see how disappointed the girls are, the fact that we tied. You know, I think this time last year, a tie against Utah would have been good. And I think we would have walked away quite happy. And this year, I think it's great to see that the girls are disappointed that we've threw it away. And, I think just as a collective, I think it was good to get everyone together and see how we played and what our style of play was like together, and you know, just getting used to one another ahead of the next game.
Rachel Daly joining us here. We're going to finish up with her in a second here, and we really appreciate you coming on here to talk about today's game with us. And there is another game coming up on CBS here tonight. I'm sure you guys are kind of all watching that. How significant of a moment is this tournament for the league in your mind? Because, look, you're always trying to grow this league. We're trying to make it increase fan bases, increase interest, the talent, the level. I thought today, based on all the constraints you had coming into this, was excellent. It was entertaining. 6 goals. Talk to me about how important this is and how important the players are taking this tournament.
Yeah, it's obviously, it's so sad for us that we can't play a regular season, and, you know, it might only be 4 or 5 to 7 games, and that's frustrating. But I think the league have worked tremendously hard on making this happen and making it as successful as it is already. It's run very smoothly here. I think there's been no hiccups, and I think that takes a lot of work from the NWSL and the NWSLPA. And yeah, the work that they've put in has been phenomenal just to be able to allow us to play. You know, that's something that we all wanted and we all wanted to push for. And albeit only a few games, it's great to get some of the games under our belts and actually play together as a team and have somewhat of a season. I think, you know, like I said, it's also fantastic that we're the first, you know, one of the first professional teams to come out and play and it be, you know, shown live on CBS. And that's a big deal for the league. And I think it just puts the league on the map a little bit more.
Well, Rachel, listen, thank you very much for coming on. Congratulations on the 2 goals today. It was fun watching you play. Glad to see the tournament up and running. Looking forward to your next game against OL Reign on the 4th. So thank you for coming on. Take care of that groin injury, and we look forward to seeing you out on the field in a couple days.
Brilliant. Thanks, Fred.
All right. The one and only Rachel Daly, always a great interview. Does not pull punches when it comes to talking about the game of soccer, which I think we love here. We're going to start wrapping things up here tonight. We really appreciate all the guests coming on the program tonight, from Rachel Daly to Todd Ramos to George Chiampas of U.S. Soccer, Adafe Mathieu, our good friend Ian Veery, and also Victor Valencek of local supporters groups. That does it for tonight. GlennDavisSoccer.com, Facebook Soccer Matters, Twitter GlennDavisSoccer. We're going to do all the shameless promotion here. And also Instagram. I've actually been posting a few pictures up over there of my road trip. Big thanks to Aaron Raybould. A big thanks, as always, to Victor Ariza and Andrew Carlson. That'll do it tonight. We're going to lead you out with the Police. Again, we remind you, our presenting sponsor, John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Remember, we're back here in Houston on Thursday night, 7 o'clock Central.
ESPN 97.5.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.